Welcome to Accounting High.
I love the concept about doing it for you. And that's a lot of times what accountants can miss with marketing is this creative aspect that can feel scary because it doesn't have the rules. Like the rules of accounting are all listed out here. A, B, black, white, yes, no, tick the box. Get a penalty if you put it in after this deadline. It's all super clear. Then you come to marketing, you're like, well, I use TikTok or Instagram. I don't know. Let's just play with it. Let's just see. Let's just play can be hard if you're going into your marketing thinking, I have to get a return tomorrow. I have to get a return in a month.
Welcome back, Accounting High. Now it's time for Social Studies. We'll teach you new creative ways to market old product. If you watch how they post, you'll see it's all authentic and genuine. Grow a following and don't get held back by perfection. Be intentional online, create content. Now that's hot. Strategy is key with social media and pods. Start slow, pick a platform, stick to it, and go post. Make a plan to engage with client watering holes. Create a focus brand, be a lead online. It's a digital world with the best ROI. Now create your own ideal client persona. Let's go. Keyword Accounting High and get ready to blow. It's time for Social Studies, Accounting Content Hub, LinkedIn Marketing or X. So come join our social club. Is it Twitter? Is it X? Shit, now I can't keep up. So comment, follow, love if you're into Social Studies.
Introducing the star of our show,
Karen and Scotty.
We're going to have a problem here.
Class is in session. Karen, thank you for joining me.
It's so good to be here. Thanks for having me.
This is awesome. You're in Scotland right now, right?
I am.
Our colors are slightly matching.
We're getting there. Yeah.
Yeah.
We're close.
I know mine are a little bit brighter, but we'll just blame that on my lighting and my camera.
It makes sense that mine would be a little closer because we worked for like years to get the right yellow of the hoodie and all that. So you made an effort.
We got to let our students in on this conversation because we're talking about colors, and that's something that's near and dear to both of our hearts.
Yes.
I may talk about colors a little too much on this show, but today it's only appropriate that we do because we're talking about branding. We're talking about marketing. We're talking about building a brand within your firm. And Karen, I've heard you speak, and I could listen to that for hours. I love what you have to say. I love that you're encouraging accountants to be themselves and to be different. That's what the conversation is kind of going to be centered on around today. But first, for our students, can you tell us a little bit how you got into this space? You don't sound like you have a Scottish or any kind of UK accent at all. So how you ended up over the pond, but first, how you ended up in this accounting space in general?
You know,
as early as high school.
Yeah, well, it's interesting. I was just thinking recently about an accounting professor who really inspired me back at university. I'm not going to go back so far as high school because honestly, the whole accounting thing never even crossed my mind at that point, like not even in the slightest. But then I got to university and I had to take an accounting class, you know, accounting 101. And as most people do in the world, other than our wonderful accountants who are listening, most people are like, oh, accounting, boring, have to do it, numbers. And I consider myself a creative person, still do. So I had that in my head, like, oh, well, I'm going to do something fun and creative. So clearly not accounting, but I was studying business. I had to take this accounting class. So I figured it was a must do and took the class. And literally within, I think the first, maybe the second class, I was like, oh my goodness, these numbers actually make sense. And then my professor was showing us like case studies and real companies like Pepsi and their numbers and how they work together. And we're reading their annual report. And that was the day I discovered that Pepsi owned Taco Bell and owned KFC and all these other things. And it was like the concept of matching the numbers resulted in something as simple as me reaching for a Pepsi at the store. And and then there was all these other case studies. But I was thinking of this professor because I gave her an acknowledgement in my book. And at the back, I've got these acknowledgements. And I said, listen, I just want to shout out to Dr. Nancy because she had this amazing ability to connect the numbers with reality, with real life.
Ooh.
And here's somebody who influenced me, a teacher who influenced me to say, let's connect accounting to reality, to real life and real businesses and real people. And that's what I get to do in my creative agency. We connect marketing with these accountants so that the accountants can actually not just understand marketing, but really enjoy it and really be like, hey, I get this. I get it's not just this list of tasks and, oh, I have to use TikTok. Okay, whatever. Here's a way for my prospects to actually understand who I am, who our team are, who our clients are, what our process is before they even meet us. Doesn't that make all the calls and the conversations so much better? And that's what I get to do.
Well, there was a little bit there. I heard you say do three times. And every time I hear Scotland, that's your accent right there. You've got it in the do.
My philosophy is, because this is fact, I don't make the rules. You don't get a Scottish accent unless you're born here. You just don't. And anyone who tries, it just doesn't come out well. I mean, come on. We've all seen Mel Gibson in Braveheart. That did not go well for the Scottish accent.
Yeah.
Stop. Like, no. Like, there's a reason there's this strong accent, something that Scottish people can be very proud about. And I'm very proud to live here. I'm a British citizen. I've been here for 22 years. This is my country now. But I'm also originally from America. And all that does is bring up good conversation. It's about the 700th time somebody's asked me that. And I think, yes, but I need to lean into my celebrity status here. I'm sure celebrities get the same questions all the time. And they're very gracious and all this.
Celebrities are the type to always wear yellow or always have something that's like on brand about them anyway. Celebrities do things like that because they, you know, it's about being loud and being you and being who you are. And
yeah.
Typically
and different.
Large personalities, different, yeah. Being different. Yeah. It, exactly. But being you is being different. That's something yeah. that I always talk about is if you are yourself 100% all the way, yes. you're going to inevitably be different.
Yeah.
Because the only way to be like everybody else is to stifle.
Yeah. Whenever people say, oh, you need to be different, I'm like, no, you don't actually need to be different. You just need to show the different that you are.
You need
because
to be you.
I love what you said there, that if you're truly yourself, you don't have to worry about standing out to be different. And I tell accountants this, things like on websites when they're like, we are forward-thinking, proactive accountants who blah, 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 blah. And you're like, yeah, but everybody's saying that. If you actually told me the thing that when I was meeting with you for 5 minutes, you threw out this comment, if you put that on your website, you would instantly stand out. You don't have to tell people you're different. You just need to show it.
And that's it. Just show you. And that now, what's the first thing people look at when they go on your website anyway? And you know
well,
this because you're a website.
Usually they go to the about page and
that's
want to know about the
go.
People. Yeah. Like other than the homepage, the about page is the next one. And you want to look for the pictures. And then when they say, oh, this person has a dog and you see the dog
yes.
and you know, you're like, there it is.
Yes. Yeah. And that was what I tried to drive into everybody. I said, the only thing they care about is our team page. So that's the only thing we cared about. And I had everybody dress up. So they had their regular clothes and then they had their fun stuff. And then when
Love
you
it.
Hover your mouse over the picture,
yes.
it flips and it shows
Love
them
it.
The fun side. Yeah. So as you hover over each person, you can see, oh, you know what? I want to work with them. That's pretty cool.
Do you know what's really funny along these lines of being yourself and being true to who you are? I think my like regular how I dress and fun side are the same. Like,
well, that's what I would say now too. And that's what's interesting about us because we are individuals inside and out in our business and in life. Not everybody's yeah. like that.
No, and it's taken a long time to get there. I remember when I very first set up this company. So I set this up in 2012. And I remember thinking, I want the kind of company where I can wear hoodie and jeans. I can wear what I want. I don't have to wear suits. I don't have to wear dresses. I don't have to wear heels. Oh, I do not like heels. It's just not my thing. And there's loads of people for whom it is. It's great. And I remember a couple of years ago, I was doing a presentation on a big stage, hundreds of people, and I was wearing a PF hoodie and jeans and I'm like, and Converse. And I'm like, oh my goodness, I've arrived. This is it. This was the dream. And I got it.
What color were the Converse?
Yellow, of course. Obviously.
Okay. Okay.
I'll
okay.
tell you the thing I regret.
Well, you can find your blue. Is this a teal? Is it a teal that you use?
Like, we call it color? PF
call
green.
It?
We call it PF
PFG.
Green.
All right. Yeah. Okay.
Because it's not quite teal.
PF green. I like it. Okay. Yep. It's not quite teal. It's not quite green.
No.
And so you definitely picked something unique, but was it in your mind's eye when you already, did you already see it in your head before you picked it?
No. So we had, well, this was a rebrand for us to go to these colors. We had the original company name and colors when I started it, which as everybody does, we plucked the name out of the air, took us 5 minutes and threw some colors together that were in another logo that my business partner had used for this other business. It was all, you know, you just threw something together, blues and grays. But by the time I took over the company fully for myself to run it entirely myself, I went, yeah, this branding, these colors, this doesn't work. This is very corporate style. So we rebranded and we had five colors, of which the PF green and the yellow were two. And then a few years later, we realized that was a bit of overkill. It was too much. So we simplified down to the top two colors, and that is this PF green and yellow, because the PF green has a little blue in it. And as you know, most accountants lean towards the blue, you know, it makes sense. You've got this blue solidity and the conservatism and the professionalism and the seriousness and all of this. And we wanted to lean into that without having blue. So we've got this blue-green thing going.
You got
and then
blue
the yellow.
And blue.
That was probably like Northern Irish, that part right there. I mean, I just plucked from all the United Kingdom accents. But then the yellow was for the creativity and the brightness and the thinking and the positivity and optimism and all of those good things.
Radiant.
So bringing those together. Yeah.
Well, that's what you reach for the skies when you reach for the McDonald's arches or any of the other yellow signs up there that you want to see the sun coming up.
Yeah, it stands out. We did discover one of the first times we exhibited at a conference. We were at a ZeroCon in London. This was years ago. And there were thousands of people there, hundreds of exhibitors. And we were the only ones in this entire hall with two levels that were in yellow. And the whole, like, I insisted that the team wear yellow t-shirts, yellow hoodies, and like some of them were cold. And I'm like, you can put on a long sleeve shirt underneath, but you got to have the yellow. You got to be noticeable everywhere you are. And people would notice us from like across the room, be like, oh, who are those people? And just wander over because we were yellow. It's a little different now at events. You might have two or three people in yellow, maybe one in bright pink.
You might have two or three yellow. You might have a few orange.
Like a bright pink, one or two orange. Yeah. But it's still mostly black and blue and gray.
Yeah, pretty much. And, you know, my brand, they evolved the brand a little bit. It was straight up blue and green, like you'd expect, two squares interlacing, just as you would expect. Don't know why they're squares shaped like diamonds, but hey, that's it. Like it was trust. It was stability. Now they threw a little bit of purple in there.
Ooh,
now it's like we got a little bit of purple. So, ooh, this is interesting here. Well, let's keep going with it. My colors for Accounting High are black and red, or white and red, but black and red.
Strong and getting your attention. Mm-hmm.
Get your attention.
Yeah.
Let's get entertained like Netflix, you know?
Yes. Yes. Right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And we talked about colors a lot, so I'm going to set aside our color conversation as much as we're going to keep getting there. So you mentioned that it fully became yours. So tell me about the journey on turning this into, and what is PF stand for our students?
Good shout. Yes. So PF is the profitable firm, which, you know, when I was saying the very first,
I thought it was people first.
And that as well. Our website address is wearepf.com, which we did because, of course, when we moved from the profitable firm, big clunky company name, to PF, we're thinking, well, pf.com is going to be a little bit difficult. I would just like to announce right here that I don't know what that will send you to. So I just don't know what could happen. But I know that wearepf.com works. At that time, we were saying, we're realizing that everything we do in marketing is collaborative. Like, we don't want to work with the accountants. They're like, here, I have a list of marketing stuff. Go do it. You know, you want somebody for that, get a freelancer, get somebody working on there. That's fine. That's great. That's what they're there for. But our agency is about this, like, let's talk about the strategy and what might work and let's do it together. And you share with us some of your words and your clients' words and your team's words, and we'll pull all the gold dust from that and figure out what might be best to use. So the rebranding went through a couple stages. So first it was the profitable firm because we thought we worked with accounting firms. We want to help them be more profitable in their marketing. Sure, sounds good. Fine. Let's go. Let's just pick a name.
And I don't. Typical accountant type name too.
Typical any.
Love that. Yeah, this is great.
I know. It's classic. And it did represent that when I started the company, it was a let's see what we can do here for me to help accountants. But my business partner at the time was just working with small businesses. So we had a kind of generic sounding umbrella name of the whole organization, but mine was the profitable firm. So after a few years, when we parted ways and he went to do work with small businesses and I focused purely on accountants just myself, that was when I said, okay, this has become something a little different. I'm really liking what it's leaning into, but I want it to be mine. Now what do we do? And the rebrand at first, we just kept the name the same. We considered many options. Honestly, I think we spent about 6 months just going back and just being like, what about this? What about this? Having some naming sessions where we just threw things around.
Sure. Yeah.
Random words like cactus, glitter cat came up that did not make the test. And we
finally said, yeah.
I mean, there's things we could have done
glitter
with
cactus.
That, to be fair.
What about glitter cactus?
I mean, I am originally from Arizona, so I don't know if that's where that came
sounds
from.
Sounds fabulous.
We didn't go that route. Glitter cactus is still, as far as I know, open. But we went with the, like, we finally said, no, listen, I think the company name is right because we still exclusively work with accountants and we want their marketing to help them be more profitable. And we were building, you know, a brand and a reputation on the name. So we just changed the logo and the colors. And we had this, you know, this icon here with all these shapes. And I won't go into the super long story. We have like this long blog post explaining each of the shapes and what they stand for and why we created them. But the gist is that it's about collaborations, about creating content and design and strategy and linking them and connecting the client and their client to PF. But by that point, writing Karen.Rayburn at the profitable firm was pretty clunky, you know, as if we're Amazon or something where you have to do first name dot last name. I'm like, at the time we had like 7 people in the company. I'm like, what are we doing? Like, but this is ridiculous. So we decided to simplify everything. That's the key with branding. You want it to be simple and clean and then have loads of possibility from it. So we brought it down to these 2 colors, just the 2 letters PF. We used the We Are PF to show the collaboration and the connection and grabbed all the social usernames for that as well. But it's really interesting looking back because, again, that was a pretty swift decision that we made because it was natural and it flowed out of what was already happening. I think a lot of times when we're working on branding with accountants, it can be quite an intense conversation and a long, long series of sessions because they're beginning to go, wait a minute, who actually are we? Who do other people say we are? What impression do we give in this industry or this area or these kind of clients? And then we have to pluck all that out and set aside fun things like color and names and say, what is it we're trying to get across? What's our vision? What are our values? What are the words that describe us? And then go to the colors and the words and all of that to say, these seem to represent that.
Yeah. And typically you already have colors for those words. So if you could do, if you could either stick with the script or go in left field and pull pink out because the owner likes pink.
We've had that happen before. I mean, we had a client who went through our accelerator group. It's a coaching group I run. And we were talking about brand and, you know, set aside the colors, focus on your audience. Everything is about your audience. Marketing is not for you. Your brand is not for you. Website's not for you. The colors are not for you, ultimately. And she said, I've just had my eyes open to realize that I thought I was being so different having purple. But she said, we work with construction businesses. And when you look at all their businesses, they're all orange and red and white. So why don't we have some colors that make them feel comfortable and connect with them? So it's not about what you like, although you may like it. I mean, I love yellow. Yellow is one of my favorite colors. But the reason we chose yellow for PF was because of what it expressed about the company.
So it's not just what your color is. It's what color is going to resonate with your audience.
Yes. And the same with everything, the website, the wording, the messaging, the social media. I get accountants that are like, well, I like LinkedIn. Of course you do. You know, as a general rule, most accountants prefer LinkedIn, feels more professional, feels more businessy. That's fine. It makes sense. And actually, there's loads of good you can get from LinkedIn. But if you are working with creative influencers who are on TikTok or Snapchat or Instagram, that might be where you need to be. Now, granted, most of the accountants I know who are working with influencers are on TikTok by default because that's where their clients are. So you're just being where they're hanging out. But it's not about defaulting to your favorite because then you will work with people who are like you. So if you're an accountant who wants to work with accountants, great. LinkedIn is your place. If you're an accountant who wants to work with lawyers, again, LinkedIn probably your place. But if you work with creatives, you might need to consider Instagram or TikTok or Threads or some of these other ones, which, as we know, new social popping up every 10 seconds. So
it's this. Now it's something else.
I know. I was recording the audiobook version of my book and I was like, OK, it's literally been what had it been? Maybe 2 months, 3 months since I've finished the final draft. And here I am recording this audiobook going, side note, guys, it's not Twitter, it's X. Like,
once people start calling it X, it's something else now. It's Musk. Yeah.
Yes. Yep. Right.
It does sound like a cologne he would sell or the scent of a Tesla.
The scent of social.
Yeah. There you go.
It's just like an idea. It's like a fragrance.
Just put it out there. So besides just your college teacher, what is it about accountants that keep you energized?
Yeah, that's a great question. I am a qualified accountant. I'm a CPA in the States, holding on to that CPA because I worked my ass off for it. So that that was good.
Well, I didn't hear about that part of this.
Oh, well, you know, I started the classic me. I started the story and launched off. So I got my accounting degree. Again, you know, nod to the professor who was like, Karen, you need to study accountancy. You need to major in that. And I was like, no. And then after 2 years, I realized, oh, my accounting classes are the ones that are the most challenging and the most intriguing, and I have to work for it, but it's very rewarding. And I thought, you know, I don't know, you know, where the journey's going to go, but surely accounting is a good foundation to have. So I studied accounting, and then I just did the next thing and did the next thing. That's sort of what I do in my life. So I graduated and went, well, what's the next thing? Well, everybody else is getting a CPA, so I guess I'll do that. So I got a job working as an auditor and then got my CPA certificate, which is, you know, it's a heavy duty commitment and it's a big deal. It took me 3 times to pass the CPA exam. And by the time I passed it, I was like, right, I'm holding on to this, and worked as an auditor for almost 5 years. And then I moved to Scotland, nothing to do with work at that time. I was at that stage in my life. You want to try something new, something different. I had friends in Scotland, had an organization I was connected with. So I came here just for a couple months. That was the plan. Just come for a couple months, see if I could get a job. But I may as well just get a job in an accountancy firm because that's where I have the skills and that's some work that I can do and do well. So I got a job at this accounting firm in a small town in Scotland. And, you know, they took a real chance on me. They applied for the work permit. So many little things worked out. You know, the universe wants something to work out. All the pieces come together. But equally, I worked really hard for it. You know, I was doing everything to make sure.
You got your United States CPA, too, that you're working with there. Yeah. Did you keep the license? Was that useful for them, too?
It was super useful. I don't think I would have gotten that job without it because that accounting firm was looking for a senior auditor. And they had tried to find somebody in the UK. And at that time, this was before the UK was in the European Union and all that, which has now come out of. But there were all these different rules about it, which they had to prove basically that they tried and failed to find somebody in the UK. So, you know, they're just reaching for the bottom of the barrel of elsewhere.
And here we got Karen here.
And then they got stuck with me.
She's excited. Yeah, she's like, I'm ready to travel the world. Yeah.
I was like, I'm in Scotland, I'll take the job. And that's sort of how it worked out. Like, you know, bless them for being willing to take that chance. But they obviously saw something that was intriguing enough. I had the skills and the energy for it. But I worked as an auditor for them for the grand sum of about 3 or 6 months. And they're like, hey, we've got this whole business development thing we're doing. This was when business development and advisory was this brand new brainwave that not everybody was doing. And they're like, is that something that's of interest to you? And I'm like, yes, no idea what that is, but let's go. You know, it sounds really interesting. And I wasn't doing the accounting and auditing work because I enjoyed it. I was simply doing it because I was able to, and it gave me a job and I got to live in Scotland. So when they gave me this opportunity, I just leaped into that. I started running seminars for business owners. Sometimes I like to be like, I'd like to apologize to these business owners, because here I am like 25 years old telling them how to run a business and how to bring that stuff together. But what I did do well is I took these concepts of thinking about the whole picture of your business, and I was helping these business owners to think about these concepts and apply them. And then the accountants were there to help them with the numbers. So it worked really, really well. So I did that for 5 years. I've got a little 5-year thing here, if you haven't picked up on that. So it's 5 years after that.
We do in 4 years at Accounting High.
You only see it looking back. Yeah. After about 5 years, I ended up moving to a network of accountants, because the firm I was working for is a member of this network organization. So there was an opportunity to work with lots of accountants. And by that point, I had worked out some things that accountants needed to do, but weren't always getting the help with. Like, they wanted to do business advisory and consulting and marketing, but they didn't know how to. So the more help they could get, the better. And because I was a qualified CPA and I'd worked as an accountant, worked in an accounting firm, worked as an auditor, I could speak the language and understand it, but also help them see that bigger picture. So after 5 years of that, was when I went, do you know, and at that time, there's more now, but at that time, I didn't see anybody actually helping accountants with the writing of the blog post, the creating of the website, the publishing of the videos, the stuff that the accountant's like, okay, I know I need to upgrade my website, but now I got to go find a website designer. Okay, and I have a designer, but they're telling me I have to write the content. So now I either have to write it myself or find a content writer. So they're having to like source all these different people. So I set up PF. That's when I set it up, was to say, here's all the things you know you need to be doing. We will help you with them, but cohesively, you know, we'll pull these together and look at the big picture. And honestly, we started off trying to help accountants run these webinars that would bring them more leads. And then we're trying to help them run these webinars, and we're going, well, you don't even have access to your website to promote this. You don't even have an email list with anybody on it. Like, there was all these foundational things that they didn't even have. So we kept backing up to the most foundational things, which now that's how we start with. So when an accountant comes to us, we say, right, let's talk about your goals, your brand, your website, and your plan. And you're going to work with us on those four things. Whether you've done loads of work or whether you haven't even considered it, we've got to collaborate on this. And once we know those four things, now we can really go at your marketing well.
Now we can even think about doing webinars.
Now we might be able to think about that. And accountants, as with many entrepreneurial business owners, are like, shiny thing. You know, here's this new exciting thing my friend's brother told me brought him 3 leads. So clearly that will work for us.
That's our silver bullet.
Right yeah. There. And you're like, the friend's brother owns a coffee shop. Like, that might work for them, but, or even if he's an accountant, that still doesn't mean it'll work for you.
When you're doing those foundational things, that reminds me of like our CFO conversations where they want to do this forecasting for these businesses that don't even have their books done. Like, and their books are in a horrible state. So then they're like, well, wait, now we have to offer bookkeeping, but now they're in tax trouble too. So we have to do taxes. So we're offering all of the things just so we can do some form of forecasting and other advisory for that business. And that's with you, naturally, most of us are not marketers. Mm-hmm. And I always had that, like, that's what was different about my firm is I always thought with the marketing brain first, before the accounting brain, because it's that creative side. If I had a full episode on the artist versus the entrepreneur, and Ron Baker and I kind of, he narrowed it down or synthesized it to creating art and doing that act of creation is a you thing. And the entrepreneur is the audience thing, and they do it for the audience. So as an entrepreneur and as doing the business, you have to think with the audience in mind.
Yeah, that's exactly it. Because I love that concept about doing it for you. And that's a lot of times what accountants can miss with marketing is this creative aspect that can feel scary because it doesn't have the rules. Like the rules of accounting are all listed out here. A, B, black, white, yes, no, tick the box. Get a penalty if you put it in after this deadline. It's all super clear. Then you come to marketing, you're like, well, I use TikTok or Instagram. I don't know. Let's just play with it. Let's just see. Maybe I'll just do TikTok videos for the sheer fun of it. Maybe I don't like TikTok, so I'll try something else. Like that whole let's just play can be hard if you're going into your marketing thinking I have to get a return tomorrow. I have to get a return in a month. So a lot of what we're doing at PF is helping accountants to look at the bigger picture so that they can tap into that creative side. And my second book, spoiler alert to the second book, is Accountants, You're Creative Too. Like you have that creative mindset.
I love that. But we didn't even talk about the first book yet. I want to talk about the
one.
We haven't
even talked about it. I'm giving a plug for the second one. Let's go.
You plugged the book before we even started talking. You pulled the book in, which was great. You should be doing that. And the business, tell me about the makeup of the business itself too. How many employees you have and what did the, you know, financially, whatever you want to share. As accountants, we like to hear those kind of things.
Yes, true, so, true, true. Yeah. Well, we have about 20 team members are all over the world. We've got some in the US, some in Argentina, Hungary. So we've covered accountants all over the world. The concepts in the Accountant Marketer book apply wherever in the world that you are. So our team is 100% remote. We do a lot of co-working and getting together. We're feeling the benefits of the more we physically get together, the more creativity and inspiration and motivation with our clients as well as our team. On a given day, we're working one-to-one with anywhere from 50 to 100 accountants. We focus on the long game, the big picture, making sure you have good quality marketing that's foundational and consistent. So our preferred way to work with an accountant is to first work on those foundational areas and then work consistently, monthly, regularly. But for some people, that's a little bit and some people, that's a lot. It just depends what you need and what supports you the most. So we're about £1 million company, coming close on that this year. And we've been just slowly building that for the last, 12 years. And we've got these accelerator coaching groups that I've been running. That's actually where the book came from, because I'm training and teaching and helping accountants on these principles of marketing. And we keep repeating these principles over and over. And I finally thought, it'd be really nice if I could just gather all of this in a document and just say, right, here's the core principles so you know them. And when I gathered all the things I'd been writing for the last 7 or 8 years, I had 60,000 words. And one of the team was like, this is not a PDF guide, by the way. You're not allowed to make it a PDF guide. It's a book. And I knew it was a book, but I also was like, oh, that's a big project. That's all. I knew that I would write at least one book in my life. But you know, the way you have this, like, I don't know what I thought it would be, but I didn't think it would be this, because that just felt at the time, it just, oh, well, that's just what I do. I just tell people these things. And I know these 12 elements, and that's our coaching group. But now I'm really grateful that that's how it's worked out, because we've got these 12 foundational elements of marketing. And now, I mean, book got published last October. And every day I'm getting people going, hey, I finally started reading it, which I'm like, listen, no shame, no guilt here. I got all kinds of books with their judgy eyes looking at me that I haven't started yet. But I'm like, start it when you're ready. But when they read it and then I'm having a conversation like, oh, it's like you said in chapter 4, there's this. And I'm like, yes, now we can get to the good stuff faster. And that's what I'm loving about it. So gathering that information to a book.
There were two great yellow books that came out of the UK last year, and yours was one of them. The other one was The Pillars by RZA.
Yes, I saw that. I was like, see, yellow.
He's on brand with the yellow too. He sticks color to that. Yeah. And so tell me, how long did it take?
It was close to 3 years from the moment I was dropping notes into a Google Doc to the day that it was published. I will say, it took a lot longer than I had hoped or initially planned for a couple reasons. One is I had a big burst of enthusiasm at the beginning, writing it and gathering it together. And I rather naively thought, now I have this manuscript, I'm good to go. We get some edits, we get it published, we're off and going. I have learned a lot about the book writing and publishing process. I did self-publish, which I'm glad I did, but it meant that when I hit a stuck point, when I had just read my own book too many times and my head was about to explode, I had to just sort of pause it and give myself a breather. This is an important thing. And that breather could take a month or two. Sometimes it took 3 months because I'd have things going on in the business that I would go, okay, I've gotten to that milestone. I'm just going to park it for a month, for a week or a month. And then all these things would be happening. And then I'd suddenly go, wait, what is happening there? And I'd have to pull that back. So some of it was just delays because life, business, I was tired. It's a long process. Some of it was because it was the first time I was doing it. And some of it's just, you know, part of this was happening over COVID, part of this happening while we were hiring and growing the business. And, you know, financially, even when you self-publish, there's a big investment, not just of time, but of the money and cash that you put into making it a good book that you're publishing. Because I was utterly passionate that the book look good, feel good. You know, when you open it, it's easy enough to read. I knew it was a big book.
You had control, and that's a wide open world. You're looking at, oh, wow, I like this book. And you start seeing aspects of other books that you want to replicate. Yes. And nobody's going to tell you, no, you can't do this. So
that was really important.
In a sense, you're creating your own worst nightmare in some cases, because now you have to actually do all the things.
Now you have to do all the things. But I will tell you, as I said, I knew I would write at least one book, but I was probably halfway through that book writing process and I had already started my second book. By the time the first book was published, I had the draft of the second book, the first draft of the third book, and notes on the fourth book are all put together. So I'm on book two now.
So
but not, I got
this
more.
Is not a trilogy. This is going further than that. Yeah.
This is I don't know what it is. I don't know what you this call it because I don't
franchise.
Know. It could go.
Yeah,
I mean,
this is a franchise
we could go
now.
Harry
Once
Potter
go
with
past
seven
the third,
books.
Yeah.
We
could... Once you go, you could go Harry Potter because you're UK. So that wouldn't be too far fetched. James Ashford decided to drop the mic with two. He thought that was enough. I don't think we're going to expect any more books from James. He did the forward to yours, though. Is that right?
He did. And I love the difference in the way people approach book writing. Like James's approach, I remember because I talked to him about this. He literally wrote most of the core of his book on a couple train journeys. I think it probably took him like a month or two. And then he, you know, tidied it up, sent it to a bunch of accountants and had them look at it. And he was just like, bam, bam, let's get it out. And I remember there was a few points in my book process where I'm thinking, oh, this is my fault. This is taking so long and I'm delaying this. And then I just sort of rethought it. And I was like, do you know, I think this is one of those times where you just lean into who you are. And one of the things about who I am is I love getting things done well and getting the detail well. The brand was really important to me. And I needed to take my time over this. Probably one of the reasons I work well with accountants. I like to take my time over things and make sure that it's done really well from start to finish. Not to say that James's book wasn't done well. He just has a speed approach that's different to my slow and steady wins the race. So I went with I'm just going to give myself that space to go slow and steady. And so that I can be proud of what comes out, that it matches me. And that was really good. When the book came out, I was like, this feels good. It looks good. I like it, how it's presented. I feel proud to, you know, give it to somebody or for them to hand it to me to sign. But it was a lot longer than I had originally thought, because my original Google Doc had 60,000 words. By the time I'd put all the words into my manuscript, it was close to 140,000 words. Mm-hmm. And my editors were like, Karen, you really got to get this down to like 100. Like most business books are 45 to 60,000 words. Yours is 140. So
you needed Rick Rubin to come in and help you reduce that.
That was what partly worked so long. Yes. The reducing was the hardest part, because by then I'm like, no, everything needs to be in here. This is really important. And then it was hard to see it objectively. So
that's where an editor would come in too.
I had editors, I had developmental editors, I had line by line editors, I had copy editors, but I'd gotten it to the point where I couldn't see like what bits needed to come out. And I thought, this is where I need to ask my audience. So I had 13 draft chapters, each of which was quite long. So I asked 13 accountants
you really
to
were
read
writing
one
Harry
chapter.
Potter. Yeah.
Yes. Genuinely. Yeah. Like, I think I've worked out that the final word count of this book is Prisoner of Azkaban.
You know, you so could you could that, throw you could a J it. In front of your name and you've JKR, right? This is
yeah, there's no copyright issues there. That's
nothing.
Fine.
You've already got KR, so you know, just kidding, right? Put the J in there.
But yeah, so I getting the accountants to read the chapter, individual chapters, and give me feedback. And I thought, if each of them reads one chapter and I see patterns with what each person says separately, then that will tell me what to cut out. The number one thing, God bless them all, that they told me to cut out was stuff about me and stuff about PF. And
ooh,
I was like,
that's the hardest thing to do.
Yes. But they were right. They were like, listen, you know, most people know you, or if they don't, like, just let's just get to the point. You don't need to go on this long rambling
story.
And then
it made it easy and you got out of the way. You got out of the way. And that's what I'm learning too.
Like I always say, I'm like, I'm telling them their marketing's not for them, for you. Your website's not. I'm like, your book is not for you.
That's it though. And you don't learn that until you go through that exercise.
No.
And you see and how much like, you don't realize you're doing it. Yeah, because people are interested in you too. They do want to hear more about you. They're connecting to you. So that's why they're going to buy the book in the first place.
Yeah, I think that's why it mattered. It struck me so much. Like, I love all these accountants that were generous with their time. These are clients I love working with. I talk, most of them we're still working with or I talk to regularly. So I knew that it was coming from this great, kind place to be like, Karen, we want your book to be the best ever. You don't need that.
It doesn't mean that they don't like you. They still like you.
Apparently, because they bought it and are enjoying it and posting about it on socials and most importantly, applying it to their firm. That's my favorite part when somebody says, my favorite story recently, I think I posted this on LinkedIn. I was talking to an accountant in the States and he said, you know, I sat down with your book. I didn't have any note-taking abilities because I thought, why would I need to do that? I'm reading a book on marketing. And he's like, I got to chapter 3 and I jumped out of my chair and I ran to the other room and I got my laptop because I needed to sketch things out, make notes. And I'm like, yes. That is what we want to see.
And that's what you were going for. And that's because you inspired them by something you said on there, something you taught them.
Probably not
them
about me. Probably about another
account. We know this.
Somebody asked me how long this book took. And I'm like, in all honesty, about 20 years. From
perfect.
Conception and concept and living it out. When I think about
you told
these
me three, so
chapters,
now you're giving me the honest answer.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. Three was when I took the words that I already had and put them in a Google Doc. So yes, I think if we go way back, because I, you know, this is why I tell accountants to be consistent with marketing. The words that I took to put in that original Google Doc were from blog posts. I've been blogging every week for 7 years. I'd been running these accelerator coaching groups with hundreds of different accountants and every time just repeating these. And actually, now that I think about it, I remember that Google Doc was actually because I was training my team to help run the accelerator. And I wanted to make sure we were all running it on the same
consistent
wavelength, saying the same key points. They bring their own tone and style, but we're all saying, you know, in the audience one, you need to have a very specific audience. It doesn't have to be an industry, but it does have to
everybody
be specific.
Everybody can bring a little bit of themselves to theirs, just like your
bring
book.
Your accent,
it needs a little bit of yourself, just not too much.
Stay focused on the key principles. Let's at least get these three key points across. So I created a G sheet. All the accounts will love me for this. I started off with a spreadsheet. And I was like, right, 12
where
sessions
else would you
of
start?
The accelerator.
Where else would you start? Excel?
That's always where you start.
Yeah.
Well, cheat sheet because I'm modern.
I'm kidding.
So,
yeah,
you know, that's either
way.
Obviously. Yeah.
You have to. Where else would you put your ideas?
Yeah.
They got to be.
Then you put the 12,
you know,
and then
pivot.
I'm like, here's the key points. And then I moved to the Google Doc and was like, I'll just drop in the blog posts that are relevant. And that's where it really started coming. So, but then the second book that I'm working on, well, I have the draft for it. Those were notes on my phone, pieces from the book, the first book that I didn't use, all these other, again, just pieces of content that I've been making notes on for years because I'm passionate about this concept that accountants being human are creative people. You have creativity within you, but it's been like drummed out of you. You've maybe even drummed it out of yourself.
Sure.
And so, oh, I'm not creative. I'm not. And everybody nods and says, yes, yes, you're an accountant, so you're not allowed to be. And I'm like, no, no, that's not true. I give you permission. You have permission. I'm just reminding you, you have permission to play and to try things. And that's what marketing lets you do.
Look, it is hard for an accountant to be out there and be creative. Yeah. I get a lot of flack. I get a lot of hate on my stuff sometimes mm-hmm. too, just because it's different and like the wrapping and all that. But then outside mm-hmm. of accounting, so within accounting, I get a lot of hate and a lot of like, oh, what is this? I don't get it. Like aggressively sometimes too. It's a little, it's a little stupid. But then outside of accounting, people love it because they don't expect an accountant to do stuff differently. Yes. Accountants are actually seen as we're the butt of every joke in movies. Yeah. Everywhere. Everybody's picking on the accountant because they're boring. They're a nerd. Yeah. They want to save the money. They want to do this and do this right and follow all the rules. And like, it's true. It really is true. There is
like kernel. There's a kernel of truth there, which is like that the accountants, there's so many things that accountants are good at. You know, you need somebody to check the numbers and make sure they're right and say, is that the best way to go?
But it's not equally, who we are as individuals in a lot of cases.
That's it. That's the whole thing. Like if you own that as your whole identity, you're missing something because every accountant business owner I've talked to, at least the ones that I've talked to, have ideas, have what if we, how might we, I saw this and thought it was cool. But as you said, I think there's a fear amongst many accountants that being creative means, oh, I have to start rapping. I have to start painting. I have to go on TikTok. You don't have to. And if that's not what your creativity is flowing out of, fine, pick something else. Like, I forget if I said this in my first book or if it's in the second one, so this might be a spoiler alert. But my mother, I grew up with my mother saying, oh, I'm not creative. I'm not very, how are you girls doing this drawing and painting? I don't even know. I'm not creative. And yet the woman can do phenomenal things with like a sweet pepper and a piece of chicken and some broccoli and make this phenomenal dish for dinner that everybody's like, this is the most amazing.
That's
what is
creative.
That? What is that that you make? And she's like, oh, it's just, you know, turkey carrot casserole. And you're like, Mom, there's no turkey. There's no carrots. What? Well, I didn't have turkey, so I used chicken. I didn't have carrots, so I used broccoli. And I just used these things. And then I thought I'd add this. And it's like, we got to the point where she'd serve enchiladas and we're like, so did this start out as an apple pie or like what? Like that's that creativity. It's just used in a different way. My mom doesn't draw or paint. Like when she would draw, it'd be a little stick figure. And I'm like, that's fine. Like you don't have to have that kind of creativity. You don't have to have rapping creativity. You don't have to be a book writer, but you've got something within you to share with the world creatively. And that's what I want accountants to lean into.
She's sharing it at the dinner table.
Yeah, exactly. Or in the garden. She can also do amazing things with plants. I'm like, my plants are just alive because I live in Scotland. It rains all the time. That is only the reason the plants are going.
It does rain there a lot.
My mother lived
it?
In Phoenix and had a whole garden in the back.
I wonder if that's why it's raining for me today, too, because we're recording. That's,
absolutely.
You brought the
solidarity.
Rain.
Solidarity.
Just the thought of it. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Oh, wow. Tell me about what give me the title again of the second book. And
so the second book, the draft title at the moment is Accountants, You Are Creative Too, with a little asterisk to be like, not the creative accounting. Everybody's always saying that. Like,
yeah, you can't do creative accounting.
Numbers.
If you search creative accounting, sometimes you'll get some, scandalous scandal.
Yeah, exactly. There. So I'm like, it's the inherent creativity that we have as humans that is not only like leached out of most humans just by education system or just life, but for accountants, it's especially true because not only are they telling themselves that, but the world, like you're saying, the world at large is like, oh, the accountants, and then they're buying into that. So what I love to see is accountant business owners who are saying, hey, I've had enough entrepreneurial mindset and creativity to start this business. And most accountants I know have other things that they do creatively in their life. So it's more about that creative mindset and giving yourself, reminding yourself you have permission to lean into that, but how to do that in a way that makes your marketing better, makes your life better, helps you lean into the things that you truly enjoy.
Yeah. Yeah, and anything is totally up to you, and everybody is, as an individual, is different. You notice that with your writing style compared to James, and you shouldn't compare yourself to people too. So again, that's one thing that we tend to do as humans, not just as accountants, is we'll compare ourselves to the others out there and like, oh, well, I can't niche in this because this person's doing it. Well, you know what? There's probably only four people in the world that are doing that, whatever that is. You can do it too. Yeah. Just because you're paying attention to that other person, you're going to do it differently than them. So if you want to, if you want to go into dentists, or you want to go into creatives, or if you want to go into construction, there may be somebody else out there doing that. Doesn't mean that you can't either.
And it gives you that freedom to just try it, because I've known accountants who are like, yes, I will focus on creatives or construction. And then they try and go, do you know what? Actually, these are not the clients I love. For whatever reason, I'm not enjoying it. I'm not helping them get results. So maybe that worked for somebody else, but it doesn't work for me. And that's okay too.
Can you give me an example of a client that you pivoted with, where you invested maybe a lot in their foundation of who they're going to work with, but then they decided, no, we should do this other thing?
Great question. I have a few that have come to mind. One that's come to mind is an accountancy firm who joined our accelerator group. And at the very beginning, we said, who's your audience, whether it's an industry niche or something else. And she said, well, we have, massive chunk of our audience is lawyers. That's who we work with. And we're good at that. We have about 250 clients. And then we have these other ones. And it was a decent sized firm. So there was probably 350, 400 clients total. By the end of the accelerator, by the time we got to session 12, we were asking people what their biggest win was for the last 12 weeks. And she said, well, mine surprised me, because I got halfway through and realized that this group of lawyers, we didn't want to work with lawyers as much. It wasn't what we were enjoying. It wasn't what we were best at. These other clients, we were more profitable. We were enjoying that work. So we sacked all 250 of these clients. We just said, listen, we're not serving this industry anymore. Here's another accountant you can go talk to. We wish you well. And she said, that brought us, now we're down to about 100 clients that are more profitable, we love working with, and it's more sustainable. It was lots of small work they were doing. So I thought that was a great example of when she started, she was like, these are who our audience is. This is our audience because this is our audience. And by the end of it, she was asking those questions of, but do we like working with them? Are we making a difference for them? Is it profitable to us? Is it the kind of work we enjoy? And if the answer was no, she looked at what would happen, do that thing that accountants are great at. Like, let's just do a little comparison, get the spreadsheet out. What happens if we drop these, but lift these up? What might we be able to do? And she was thrilled with where that brought her.
Oh, she probably enjoyed life after that too. Because once you let go of the things that are holding you back and holding you down, because you don't see that too. Sometimes it's like, this is the way it is. This is the way it has to be. And then you deal with it in other ways.
Yeah. Too. And a lot of times the change that happens in our life for something like that is because something outside has happened. You know, a client left, a big, big client, and that had a big impact, or COVID happened and it affected you in a particular way. And it's this outside thing and you're forced to adjust and then it's better. But I also love to see people stopping to think, well, what if something like that happened? How might that be? And then crafting it that way, instead of waiting for something from outside, like illness or any of these things, to shock you into having to do it. But either way, you get there in the end.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's about doing what we want to do and not what we have to do too.
And it takes a while to figure that out. Yeah. A lot of accountants, maybe you haven't figured out what you want to do, but just asking the question, saying, I get the privilege to choose who I work with, and I can say no to anybody. I'm under no obligation to say yes to any prospect who comes to me for any reason, but it's good to know the reasons and say, I'm not best placed to serve that kind of client. Even though they would bring me tons of money, it's not good money because I won't enjoy it, and it won't tap into what I'm good at or what I and the team are the best at.
So you made it very clear on your audience and who you're working with that it's easy to say no. If somebody from another industry came to you, do you still take on that client? Do you have other clients outside of accounting?
Yeah, it's a great question. We have said yes a few times. In the early days, it was, you know, yeah, sure, we can help you too. Very quickly realized that we were better to stay focused on our exclusive audience because we're able to serve them better. We were able to be more efficient. Our systems matched, our communications matched, the wording we use matched. So for a long time, we were like 100% exclusive, always said no. We have in the last couple of years worked with a few companies whose audience was accountants. So that company that we worked with, they weren't an accounting firm, but their audience was accountants. So we understood their audience. And since that's the primary important thing for marketing, you know, we did that. And that has worked well from time to time. There's a few times it hasn't, you know, where we've tried, they've made an effort, we've made an effort, and we just said, listen, I think this is just becoming hard. And marketing, whilst challenging, ought not to feel that hard. I would say every rare once in a while, there'll be an exception for a good reason, but it'll still have that accountant connection. So no, I'd say we're still exclusively accountants, bookkeepers, accounting firms, you know, we're open to anyone in the accounting field. But we do tend to work with accounting firms that have 1 to 4 partners. They might have anywhere from 1 to 50, maybe 100 employees. And it's that size of business where there's still few enough owners and partners that they can turn the sailboat quickly. And it's not this big, massive cruise ship that you got to be like, it just like takes forever to like turn the tiniest bit.
Yeah.
Like, that's fine. I was on a cruise ship last summer with my sister in Norway. Loved it. So many places we got to go. But oh my goodness, that ship moving.
You're
it takes
not
like
gonna
an
make
hour
a turn
to
on a
like,
dial. Yeah, that's
yes. So these accountants that are in their little sailboat and they're like, let's go this way. No, wait, let's go this way. That actually works well with the kind of a marketing we're doing where we try something, we stick at it. But if we need to turn or we need a decision to be made, we don't have to go through, no offense to the 12 partners and that size of firm, but that just means that, you know, it takes a year and a half for them to decide that no.
You don't have to rebuild the foundation of a cruise ship. You can rebuild the foundation of a sailboat. And
yeah.
Here's
we'll
a
try
question.
A new sail or
yeah.
Yeah.
Here's a question that we've posed. So you take that one ship that docks from Scotland or from England and is going to America and you change all the planks and everything about that ship. Is it the same ship when it gets to America or is it a different ship? So you're helping this marketing, you're helping this company and you've changed everything about them. You've replaced all of the foundation and they're totally brand new. Is it the same company or is it different on the other side?
That's a really good question. I would say every company goes through more change than you realize. So I'd say the process of that replacing would probably change it to the point that you might think it's the same, but it's actually significantly different, you know?
Yeah.
Because it's not just a matter of replacing the same plank because, I don't know, the type of wood is different or the length of it or... Yeah, and then the people
region.
Who are working on the ship start to change. So maybe the physical ship is similar, but all the people have changed because these people got on in England and these people got off in America. So it's kind of a tough analogy to wrap my head around, but I would say that's actually more likely the case to be for most accounting firms is few of them are going to stop and rebuild the whole ship in port before they sail off. Most of them are sailing. You're in process.
You have to
going
be.
Along.
Yeah,
you have to change things. But from time to time, you need to pull into a port and maybe make 1 or 2 significant changes. And if that means you need to sell the boat and buy another one or start a fleet or whatever, that does happen sometimes. But most people are going to make a few shifts and a few shifts. But by the time you reach where you're going, then the whole process has changed your mindset and your attitude and the way that you describe your ship. So that is why, circling back to branding, that's why when we're talking with an accountant about their brand, which, you know, logo, name, colors, tone of voice, all of these things, if you haven't even looked at it in the last 3 years, I guarantee your firm has changed more than you realize. And yet your brand is revealing an old you. So if you're saying this is the sailing ship accounting pro, but actually it's changed so much, it's a different, it's got a different style now. And that's what you have to figure out what that change is so that you can describe it to people.
Oh, that's beautiful. That's a great way to answer that question, because there really isn't a right answer to that.
I know. I mean, I was getting to that point where the analogy could become lost in my analogy, but
no. And I love it. I love the juxtaposition of everything and how you used the analogy to describe the firm part of it too. Our students, thank you. Remember, go. This is now required reading for Accounting High students.
Oh.
The Accountant Marketer by Karen Rayburn of We Are PF. Whenever I think of PF, I think We Are PF. That's just what you should think of, because it's the best way to say it. You've turned an acronym into something that could be universal, but it's also part of your brand. PF could be somebody's initials. It could be anything. It could be whatever you want it to be at this point, right? You don't even have written anywhere.
You're welcome to think creatively about what it means to you.
So, well, class dismissed. I'm going to write us out with our original intro.
Thanks. Thanks, Scotty. Good to be here.
Follow this show. Stay in the know. Thought lead online through networking. Like, share, repost, subscribe, YouTube, comment, engage, create, find your way.